another episode of Hold My Cutter coming your way from Burn by Rocky Patel, just a couple of blocks away from PNC Park and right across the street from the studios where you're going to find our guest here, Greg Brown, Michael McHenry, and this is the King and his court.
Mm-hmm.
This is
the great Greg.
Rob King, who is along with Michael and me enjoying this featured smoke. This is the Decade Cameroon. Binder and filler is Honduran. The wrapper is Cameroon. Little notes of vanilla, little smoky coconut, and a leathery finish. And it's a really, really good smoke.
Yeah, I need to put some oil on my leather. I cut it up and messed it up. So yeah.
I smell the coconut.
Yeah.
I do.
Well, hey, for Rob, first of all, what a treat it is. And Michael gets to work with you almost every single day. I get to watch you and Michael work almost every single day. We don't get together enough, but this is a real treat for us. And you, Rob, are a broadcasting legend. I sound like the fourth Michael McHenry.
I'm in the presence of two legends.
So I think this past August, was it your 23rd year in Pittsburgh?
23rd, yeah. That's right.
Does it seem like it?
You know how time goes, yes and no, right? I mean, sometimes things seem like they just occurred yesterday, and sometimes they seem like long ago. When I moved here, my kids were 2 and 3 when my wife and I moved here. It's been an absolutely fabulous place to raise a family. I've told that to people. I don't think you can beat Pittsburgh for raising your family. It's just a great place. And I mean, I'm pretty much all sports all the time. And talk about a great sports market. I mean, and a great city and great people. I've always felt like the people remind me of kind of a mixture of the Northeast where I grew up and the Midwest where I went to school, but the best qualities of both. Like, they'll tell you if you're a jagoff.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? They're not going to back off.
That's right.
But by the same token, real politeness, real manners, real, you know, just, I mean, the people here are just phenomenal.
Real
people.
You know?
Phenomenal.
There's a sprinkle of the South. You know, I'm the one guy here that there's a sprinkle of that with those manners and different things. And, you know, you see over time as the United States kind of gets more diversified and different things happen. But yeah, it is the epitome of what I think of growing up, of a great place, you know, to raise a family. I hope to do so.
You know, and I was raised that you should have good manners, right? Hold out a chair, hold the door open for a person, a woman, anybody. Pittsburgh is the most real mannered city I've ever been in. People let you in with a car. And if you don't get, you don't let somebody in, you're a jagoff. And then
I did not know what that meant for a long time.
It's great.
Let you turn left.
So
at the light.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Pittsburgh left.
So and then here's another example for me. Every place I've ever lived, you're in a grocery store, right? A new line opens up, right? Because there's so many customers in line. You're last in line or whatever. The last person in line always jacks that because they have the best point of view, the best vantage point to see that cash register's opening up. What do they say in Pittsburgh every time? I'll take the next person in line. And nobody complains. That's the way it should be.
That's exactly.
That's manners that aren't
so
just
true.
It's not just textbook manners. It's real life. I'm gonna treat you with some dignity and respect, which is what the essence of what manners should be. I go on about Pittsburgh. We could do the whole sports cast or the whole podcast be talking about Pittsburgh. I love it here.
Well, Rob King, who is, I mean that. I mean, I've not ever met anyone in the business of broadcasting, which can be a bit,
yappy?
Yeah, can be any city, but it's just the way it is broadcast.
Just go beep, burp, burp, beep, beep, beep. We'll just beep it out right there.
But no one has ever said athlete or member of the media anything bad about this guy. They love Rob King. He's so professional, so easygoing on the air, that approach, the Hall of Famer, because he was born and raised in Cooperstown, New York, and he's been, as we say, 23 years and going, a pre- and post-game host, anchor, studio guy, play-by-play, all the sports. What's your favorite thing to do?
You know, I've been asked that, and
because he is a Swiss Army knife.
It is interesting. Like I, you know, when I said earlier, I'm all sports all the time. Like in my backyard, I was the first ever like 3-time Hall of Famer. You know, like I'd be shooting baskets. Here's a Hall of Famer, Rob King. You know, and I'd be in the backyard
throwing
a football. Here's all of them. Oh, good. And then the same thing with playing baseball. And really, one of the great things that I loved about this job in Pittsburgh, and obviously it's changed and some things have changed, but the fact that there was the constant variety. Like, you know, I love talking to, you know, today's athlete is king. And when we're talking about tomorrow, those athletes will be king. The ones playing, they're the story. They're the big story. But when you talk to former athletes and they've got a chance to step out of, I kind of call it the swirl, like everything around them revolves around the players, as it should be. You know, how getting your flight on the plane and making sure that there's a nutritionist to look after you, because there's so much investment in these guys. And 30,000 people go to a Pirates game and 70,000 people go to a Steelers game to see these guys perform. So the present is king. But it's wonderful to talk to the people that I grew up watching, you know. And you know, you mentioned Cooperstown. I'm so delighted to see Jim Leland in the Hall of Fame and to get to know him a little bit, not like you when you were here, but to talk to a great, phenomenal guy, Dave Parker, you know, to interview some of these guys. There's a guy who should be in the Hall of Fame, by the way. I'll put my flag on that.
That'll be another episode. We're going to tease that.
That man should be in the Hall of Fame.
And Al Oliver.
Yes, I agree. I just love it all, you know. And I love, like, if there was like a sports library, like I'd be in it, you know, reading through the old stuff and, you know, and you know, being over my computer. I love the preparation. I love play by play and the memorization that goes with that in football or basketball. The watching of the tape, the preparation for the daily shows, the historical specials. I love it all. I've been blessed to be able to do this for as long as I have. I mean, I really am, and with great people too, like you guys. But I mean, it's just, so to pick a favorite, I just, it's like almost like my kid being the kid in the backyard. Whatever's in season, whatever I'm doing now, that's my favorite.
What you love.
Yeah.
How about growing up in Cooperstown, New York, though, Rob? That is so wild.
Yeah. It was, so I my father was from there, and his family for years and years and years. I moved up there in eighth grade. Now, I went there quite a bit as a kid growing up. I was in Westchester County, outside of New York City.
Oh, that's where you're. Okay.
So yeah. I was in Westchester, various parts of Westchester. I was actually born in New York City, but never lived there.
Okay.
Lived in Tarrytown, White Plains, and then we moved a little further north. I think my father was just, you know, sort of getting us used to the final, okay, we're going to move up and go to Cooperstown.
So it just kept trickling you that way?
Yeah. It was actually a really big culture shock for me because, you know, I was at Westchester. I went to John Jay High School for 1 year. I'm guessing it was the size of maybe like a Hampton High School here in Pittsburgh. And then, you know, fairly, you know, well-off suburb. And then I moved to Cooperstown, which is also, you know, not exactly a place that's poverty-stricken either. Yeah. But now I'm holding fence posts because my father wants to raise cattle with a one-armed guy named Ken Tyler.
Come on.
I'm like, oh, he's swinging this axe at me. I'm like, oh, what have I gotten
into? From the city to the axe.
What's going on here? It was a radical change. And I don't really remember my first year and a half in Cooperstown that well. I didn't like it at first. And then my high school experience was wonderful. Absolutely loved it. It was a small school, so I could play three sports, actually four sports, because I played baseball in the summer. And then I wound up playing tennis in the spring. So I could play four sports year round, which you couldn't do at a big school. I mean, it's occurred to me I could be at a big school and not play one sport at some of the schools around here that are powerhouses. So it was a wonderful experience. And of course, I'm a huge, huge baseball fan, huge fan of the history of the game. I love reading old books, always have. I love, as I mentioned, interviewing old guys. I love today's game. I love baseball. So when I go back, I do try to slip into the Hall of Fame every second or third time I get back there to visit family.
Did you love it before you moved to Cooperstown?
Oh, absolutely.
You did.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the two biggest sports for me growing up were baseball and football. Yeah. Those are the sports that I
option quarterback.
Absolutely loved.
Yeah, yeah. You're a quarterback. Yeah.
The slowest option quarterback in America.
Hey,
option. Like, I had a good arm. I just wanted to throw the ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, but what happened was that my lack of discrimination as to who caught it eventually had the coaches saying, well, maybe we need to throw it a little
bit
less.
Let's keep it closer to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe just, if you just pitch it a couple of feet, that probably our guy will catch it then. So, baseball, I've wanted to do something in baseball, and I'm getting so far afield here. I was with John Wehner years and years ago, and I said, John, I could never understand why, as I went on in baseball, now I started playing less and less because I was just playing in the summer. I was playing, Pony League, then I played American Legion because I could play varsity tennis as a freshman. So I'm like, well, that's not a hard choice for me.
Yeah.
But I could still play in the summer, still play baseball. Of course, now you're taking, around here, you're playing fall ball and spring ball and summer ball. I was taking the baseball season out of the equation. So as each year went on, it was, my place on the team began to diminish a little bit. But I said, you know what? I would see a fastball and I would think I was on it. And I thought I was going to hit it and it would be by me. And I could never understand that. I don't understand. And I always thought I should be able to hit a baseball a long way. I was always able to hit a golf ball a pretty long way. I'm like, I don't understand. So now John drops a napkin on the floor of the park house and says, I'll tell you what you were doing wrong. And so he went through the whole thing about how, you're taught to have a level swing, and your first move with your bat to create the level path was to drop it back and then bring it through this way. And he said, by the time you drop it back and try to have this level swing, he said, a level swing is just you take it. Pardon me, John, if I'm not exactly getting it right.
I got you. You're in a good place.
The level swing is only level this long. You have to bring the bat down through the strike zone, and then it levels out, and then you bring it back up. Well, by the time you do this and drop the level bat, and the bats drop back here instead of being here, I mean, look at the space. And so I was like, oh man, I wonder. He said, if you stood with your back foot to a cage, right, and you had a batting tee, that your bat would never hit. So imagine you're in a batting cage right here, and you got a tee right here. Your bat would never hit the cage. And I'm like, what? Because I'm like, my first move was this. No, he goes, no, your first move should be this. So my kids were playing. My son Schaefer was playing t-ball at the time. So I was like, So I kind of, is anybody out here? So I grabbed the tee and did it. And I'm like, oh my God. So then I went to North Park, and I'm like, okay, well, let me warm up, and let me put it on the fastest one they got. And I'm like, where was John Wehner 30 years ago when I needed him? I can hit him.
He's a great hitting guru.
Oh
man.
My, I mean, you talk about, and again, you talk about like the fun part of the game. I mean, to sit there and listen to John Wehner talk about hitting, Bob Walk to talk about pitching, I mean, or Steve Blass. I mean, Steve talking about the compete side of it a lot, and Bob talking about, the different things that he would do. I mean, think about the access we have to that. I love hearing stories of players being scouted and in all sports, really. We're blessed.
Well, but out of high school, did you go to Hobart in Geneva?
I started out of Hobart College. And then
what made you go there?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I really have no idea.
You transferred to Washington U in St. Louis.
Yeah, I did. And that was the reason that I went there was because, well, there was two reasons. When you take your PSATs in high school, right, the preliminary to the SATs, that was, I think, the very first place I received a letter from. So I was like, oh my God, a college sent me a letter,
Yeah.
And then, of course, you get hundreds of them. You're just inundated in mail.
Yeah, right.
But it was the first one. And then my best friend went to St. Louis University. So I thought, okay, well, here's a place I can go. I can get my feet underneath me. I'd hurt my knee my senior year of high school. I didn't play my first year at Hobart. Went through spring ball. went through two or three practices, hurt my knee, hurt my other knee. And I was like, well, I guess maybe that's it for football for me. And maybe I need a fresh start. So I went to Washington University and I was like, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. So it had been quite a few years since I played high school football. And I gave it a try and I played receiver my junior year and they switched me to quarterback my senior year. And it was one of those things where I was just talking about this with my son the other day. He rode for a year in college and then he got hurt. And I said, hey, listen, at least you had that year and you had some success. He was a freshman rower and he was in the varsity boat. And I'm like, hey, you know, I would never be able to look back and say I could have done that without even, you know what I mean?
Amen.
I'm glad you get to my age and the things that haunt you. Yes, we've all done things we wish we hadn't done. But it's the things that you didn't do that you wish you'd tried that I think you regret. And I'm glad I played football and had a great time and had a blast both years playing. Our teams weren't very good, but you know, my roommate in college who was an offensive guard, he and I remain great friends to this day. He lives out in Colorado. We stay in constant touch, and it was a great, great experience.
Well, you were better than you say, too, by the way.
Yeah, well, they should have thrown. We know that.
Should have thrown more often.
Should have thrown more often.
Then I could have led the country in interceptions, not just the league.
There you go. Then you'd be on the history books forever, though.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Did you go to a school for communications and journalism, by the way?
I was an English literature major.
How about that?
So,
I'll say something about that. I've enjoyed, you know, being a guy that's really, I struggle with English. I struggle with a lot of the communication stuff in school because of learning disabilities. Every day, I get excited to hear his open because I don't know what's coming. And he articulates it so well and brings it to life. He brings the city that we're playing in. He brings the circumstance in. He brings our city into it. And it's just like, I'm always like this. There's been times, Brownie, I'm looking at the camera. They're like, Michael. I'm like,
yeah,
I'm still thinking about it.
Oh, yeah.
What does that mean?
You're mesmerized.
Yeah. And there's been the midnight
poetry.
Yeah. This year he did the midnight of Paul Revere. And my phone starts blowing
18th
up.
18th of April in 75, Brownie.
Yeah.
My wife finishes the poem or the song on text. And she's like, all caps. And she says, tell Kinger you just killed it.
He knows.
Yeah, he knows.
That is the one. So, I don't know. I mean, you know, most times when you turn on the TV, you're seeing guys, you know, not on a post-game show, but if you're seeing a studio format, you're seeing people that are reading stuff off prompter, which is what I did my whole career. So, there aren't that many opportunities to write anymore because we don't have a prompter.
Right.
Everything's you know, extemporaneous, right? So, but that is one opportunity. It's off camera, and I can write something, and I can read it.
He just did it.
And
extemporaneous.
I
never heard it.
I enjoy that. I enjoy that aspect of it. Like we said before, I enjoy every aspect of it. So I became an English major because I really didn't know what to do, and so I've always loved to read. I mean, I don't have a ton of hobbies. I like sports and I like to read. So I was like, at some point I was like, well, I'm going to call it majoring in reading. They can call it English literature. But that's what I did. I just read and then I wrote papers and then they gave me a degree. It was great, you know.
That would be a sense of torture, I think, for me.
So it took me a little longer to get through school. I mean, I had no idea what I wanted to do. Really none. You remember Wild Kingdom of Omaha? The mutual...
Perkins.
Right. The guy who started the San Diego Zoo.
Yeah.
And I think might have had a hand in the St. Louis Zoo as well. Well, there was Marlon Perkins. And then there was Jim, who was out in the
Jim
field,
was the
right?
Guy would go to on Carson, I think.
Jim would like jump out of a helicopter on top of a bighorn sheep or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I kind of like to do that. I think that looks fascinating.
That sounds like fun.
It's athletic and it's outdoors and it ties in a lot of things that I like. But then you had to get a zoology degree, and I took biology. I'm like, not for me, man. Not going to happen.
Not doing that.
So I moved around on different things. And then finally I said, look, man, I got to get a degree, you know. And so my last 2 years, I think, and I took calculus, which I actually... actually enjoyed, but other classes that I didn't enjoy that much. And I mean, I'm fascinated by the sciences, but I don't have really any real aptitude for it. So I just took English Lit and history classes my last 2 years. I didn't have enough. I had enough credits to major, get a double major, but I would have had to go back and take an intro class. And I was like, I got my degree, man.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go.
Let's go start life.
I think you're doing just fine.
Let's go start life. Yeah.
So a Washington University Bear, right?
The Bears. Bears. The Bears. Yeah.
Do you know, by the way, trivia question, not to put you on the spot, but just curious to you, do you know what the name was up until about 1925 for Washington University?
Do you know
the answer to this?
I do not.
No.
The Pikers.
Really?
So,
what is a Piker?
That's what they were. They were the Pikers, but they changed it in 1925.
So Washington University football was at one time, like, I think they're 1-0 against Nebraska. Like, you know.
Wow. Whoopsie. Listen,
did you beat them?
Well, if he was throwing he had to be throwing.
So you did.
We won 3 games in my 2 years. 2 of them were against the University of Chicago. That was our arch rival.
Oh, wow. No kidding.
So they set the University of Chicago and Washington University set up the University Athletic Association, which had Carnegie Mellon. I don't think they compete in it in football anymore. I think they still in basketball. A variety of like-minded institutions, Case Western in Cleveland, Emory down in Atlanta, NYU in basketball, Johns Hopkins in basketball. So University of Chicago, the Maroon, by the way, the Maroon, who dropped football, then picked it back up. So that league, if you want to trace it back and take credit, which of course I clearly do, first Heisman Trophy winner, Jay Berwanger, University of Chicago, drafted by the Bears and said, nah, you can't pay me enough money. Can you look at that? Back in 1936, or I think 36 was the first year of the NFL draft.
Holy cow.
They couldn't pay him enough money. Wow. You think about that now?
How about that?
I mean, like, the history of early football is like, you know what? I'm going to go be a dentist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Imagine that.
don't need that.
Yeah. That, no. You're not paying enough money. I'm going to go be a dentist.
And that's also when they had the one bar face mask. So maybe he could have done both and had a great career, right? I'm a dentist. Hey, guys, I got you.
Create his own clientele.
Yeah, you know, clientele.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Listen, you remember all those guys? They just had no teeth.
Oh, yeah. No helmets. No face mask.
Yeah.
Rob, was it KPLR was your first job out of college in St. Louis?
Was I was a producer at KPLR. TV.
Okay.
That's what a lot of people don't know about. Like, who you are, the producing, the directing, the writing, all the things, because they see his face. You guys do so much that people don't know about, and it's funny that every single person that's in this game that I respect, and I'm like, wow, I just can't believe how good they are. They always talk about the prep, and that's the love they have, and I'm the same way. I would say the same successful dudes I know and respect in baseball love the grind, love the prep more than anything. I think there's something to be said about that. So,
yeah, I mean, being a producer really, really
that's
helped
so cool.
me. So that was my first job out of college. I was basically unqualified, right? I mean, I had no qualifications to be working at a TV station. I got an internship. I put in a lot of work for free because I realized I didn't know what I was doing. So,
what made you do it, by the way?
Remember that friend I told you about that went to St. Louis University? So I was pumping gas at an Amoco station on Little Boulevard. I actually remember this. And I said, you know, I don't know what I'm want to do. I'm not getting through to get my degree in 4 years. So now I've got extra time. I don't want to go to, I took my GREs. I was thinking about going to business school and actually applied to business schools. But I thought, you know, I could be a lawyer, but man, I'm accruing debt. Like, I need a job. I need to make money. You know, I don't want to go 3 more years of law school. I want to get out from underneath any debt I've already accrued. I want to start my job. And I said, I don't want to go to law. I said, I don't think I want to go to law school. He goes, well, you should be like a TV sportscaster. I mean, all you ever do ever, it revolves around sports. And I was like,
huh. That's good advice.
I wonder how somebody gets to do that. Like, I was of this belief that, like, you turn on the TV and, like, these mystical, magical people are on TV and they're in movies. And who are these people, you know? So I was like, well, I'll give it a shot. And then really all I really wanted to do was be a producer. I'm like, I'll just go be a producer. And I was interning and then my first job there as a producer and a news director named Gil Engler, said, you should be on TV. That's what you should be doing. You shouldn't be a producer. You should be on camera. Wow. And so I was like, okay. So then my first on-air job was in Utica, the first of a couple of pay cuts I've taken in my career, because you make less money on the air in Utica than you do as a producer in St. Louis. And then that's where, you know, that's where I started to do it every day, was in Utica.
Utica to Syracuse from there.
Utica back to St. Louis.
On air in St. Louis,
doing TV and radio, kind of the beginning of talk show radio. So the sports director at that station, Rich Gould, still a good friend of mine. He and Bob Ramsey, who calls the St. Louis University game, so I get to see him when he comes into town when they play Duquesne. He was the weekend guy. Rich was the sports director, and Rich is still a very good friend of mine. Great, great guy. So he and I started to do radio. This was way before most sports talk show radio things. And he made it so much fun. You know, this guy would come in and he'd be like, what are you guys doing? Here's a pie chart. You're supposed to talk about, you know, the Cardinals here, the Rams here. And then we get off on some tangent. And then finally our show was successful. So he was like, just do it. Do whatever you want. The two of us just had a, because we were really, really good friends doing the show on the air. So it was just,
How long did you do that?
Oh, 2.5 years.
Really?
Yeah. And then the problem with that was, for me with the TV, was they didn't have weekend news. So I was doing reporting, but I wasn't doing a lot of anchoring.
Okay.
And I wanted to anchor. And my wife and I, both of our moms were widowed. And we wanted, my wife's from upstate New York, Megan from right outside of Cooperstown. Both of our moms lived up there. We wanted to start a family. We wanted to be closer to them in doing that. So all those reasons led me to go from another pay cut from St. Louis.
Got
to
give up to go back, up here.
That's exactly what happened in both instances. They both paid off. So I went from St. Louis to Syracuse, then Syracuse to Pittsburgh.
How long in Syracuse?
About 5 years.
And how did you get the Pirate gig? Pittsburgh gig?
So
yeah, how did you end up? I always forget. So, I don't know if we talk about that much.
So back when, and again, I'm not, you know, like, I'm not 100% sure on all the details, but Fox Sports was launching these regional sports networks. So they launched a sports network in Pittsburgh, and they launched one at the same time in St. Louis. And so the Fox Sports Net people actually contacted me and said, hey, listen, would you be interested in doing a St. Louis all sports? And I'm like, are you kidding? All sports? Absolutely. They said, well, you're going to be going to Pittsburgh first. I said, okay. So we did the St. Louis shows out of Pittsburgh. So I was hired in 2000 to do St. Louis shows. And they said, listen, you know, you'll be there a year, year and a half, and we'll move you out to St. Louis. So two things happened. One, as always seems to happen, things move slower than they're put out on paper. 9/11, I think, had a big impact with that as well. That was a year after I'd been there. The second thing that happened, and I have to tell you, I love St. Louis. I mean, you know, I was there in prime years of my life for meeting people and going out. And yeah, I mean, college friends, my friends, my buddy's friends who went to St. Louis University. I knew a bunch of people from there, people that I'd met when I was working there. I knew a lot of people in St. Louis. I think I was here for about 3 months, and I thought, what if I could just maybe stay in Pittsburgh, you know?
Take that, St. Louis.
And so, no, but I'm just kidding. I love St. Louis. I did. I mean,
me too.
So it was like, I mean, had it happened then, had it happened after that first year, I'd probably be out in St. Louis now. But as it turned out, it took, I don't even know when they finally moved. But by that time, I was doing as much or more Pittsburgh stuff than I was doing St. Louis stuff. We were still doing the St. Louis show. So if you're wondering how that happened, it's the hour time difference.
Different central time.
Of course, there are lots of times where the Pirates played the Cardinals and there's no time difference at all. The Penguins play the Blues, there's no time difference at all. If you were taping shows and doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
I've heard some of those stories. That's wild.
It was fun. It was crazy. It was energetic. you know, the people there are so talented and are still, I mean, that the crew at what is now Sportsnet Pittsburgh is sensational.
That's on the
so talented. They're so good. So I was doing more, and then at some point I think I was doing probably more Pittsburgh than St. Louis. And so when the time came, I wound up staying in Pittsburgh.
Who were some of the others? Pat Paris, one of those guys?
Pat Paris.
Anybody else?
Brent Stover.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Who is doing stuff, I think, with CBS Sports. Pat is doing news, I think, out in Tucson, Arizona. Really good guys. Guy Junker was here for a little while. Guy and I remain friends. Of course, Stan. I'm trying to think if Marshall Harris was here for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Trenny Kuznarek was here for a while. Yeah. I don't know if Trenny was here and we were still doing both.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the people that were doing both.
Yeah, it's you know, you know how this is, right? Like, you know, you could tell, you know, give me a sports stat and I can name it for you. Ask me what I had for breakfast yesterday. I have no idea. No. It all kind of jumbles together.
I've actually gotten in arguments with my wife because I can remember.
Oh, you lose.
A sequence from 2011 that lost the game, and I can walk through it. I can even feel my breath when I'm thinking about it, but I can't remember to take out the trash.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty sad.
But my wife has a great, Megan's got a great memory. And I tell people, you know, and I don't remember, who is that? Wait, what happened there? You know? And I tell people, I know I've had a great life. I'm sure of it. I just can't remember any of it. But Megan will let me. Yeah. Megan fills me in.
Most wives have really good memories.
Amen.
So thank goodness.
They don't forget. Where and how did you develop this style? Did you emulate anybody? Or was it just this?
Or did you have a Yoda? I like, so you talk about Yoda. You're Yoda. Did he have a Yoda?
Well, people that were mentor, like Mike Lang, I revere to this day.
Which, sure. He's cool about this, you guys are my mentors. You guys have poured into me. I've learned more from you guys. You guys have challenged me. You've taught me things, and it's been inside the box, outside the box. But the one thing that you guys do better than anybody I've ever seen, I've done national stuff now, I've done a lot of things, it's my seventh year, believe it or not, is you guys see the personality in the person and you pull out potential. And that's the one thing that's incredible. And it goes back to what Teague told you when I first came on, what your job was. Yeah. And you share that in a minute. But like, you guys bring to life and bring out what most people can't. You guys are the epitome of service leaders and thinking about not just the guy right next to you, but the fan at home when you're watching the game, because you guys are fanatics when it comes to the Pirates and comes to sports, and you love it. And that shows every single time you guys even touch a mic or a camera, anything, you see it, whether you're behind the scenes or in the scenes, it's amazing.
You know, I will say that. Thank you, Michael. I'll say that. So I have to say the Teague line.
Yeah, you have to say it.
And try to impersonate Teague as well as I can. Oh, Teague's the greatest. By the way, we share a birthday. Teague and I are both born March 5th.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Hey, March 4th?
March 4th.
And yep. Teague's my neighbor. Teague's my neighbor. I can see his house from my house.
He's the best. Wow. Teague, you know that. Teague's the best.
Pisces? What is that?
Pisces, yeah. Until they change it again.
So Teague said, we each have a job. Your job is to make me look good. And my job is to make me look good.
And it is. It really. There's some truth to it.
There's a lot of truth to that. There's a lot of, you know, you talk about, I get that BA degree, right? It says arts and sciences. I'm like, I don't remember any sciences. But there's an art and a science. So the science is, hey, you got to make this guy, you know, how do you do that, right? So that's really the job. How do you best do that? I tried to describe what I do. So what I used to do as an anchor for a local sportscast, right, is to use a basketball analogy, I think like you're the shooting guard, right? You've got to be the star. You pass it on occasion, but you're there to give your opinion, to report the news, certainly all of it. Well, when you're working with analysts, you're a point guard. You know what I mean? You have to get the factual information out to the fans, make sure they're informed, but you have to, you know, you're there to set up your teammates. I mean, that's really, to me, that's the essence of the job, I think. And it makes it fun. I mean, I enjoyed doing it, and it's a collaborative effort. You know, if you're not both doing you know, if you're not both on the same page, I think your sports cast or your game is doomed.
Some people ask me, like, what's your goal of a broadcast? One of my main goals is to, if you're sitting at a bar watching this, listening at home, wherever, taking your device, watching the show, is to make you feel like the viewer is there with you and you could share a beverage with them.
Amen.
Watch the game with them. Make it comfortable. And that's, I think you... The first thing comes to mind, along with professionalism, that's first and foremost with Rob King, but comfort. There's a comfort level there, and that is
there's so a living unique. Living room feel.
Yeah,
too. Like you guys feel, it's almost like it's family style too. Like it's comfortable whether you're at the bar, you're in the living room.
Yeah.
You guys kind of, but it's cool because I don't know how you do it, but you blend it together. It doesn't matter where you're at. It's like, huh? And that I think it's because you guys love the city and you're able to captivate, but even if you go somewhere else, you do the same thing.
So Rob, is there a Yoda? Is there a one person that stands out? Not to, again, put so, you on the spot.
Just no, I mean, the guy I've mentioned a couple of times, Rich Gould. Okay. I mean, one of the things that I really learned from Rich was that, you know, you can sort of be yourself. You can, you know, and Rich is a great guy. Hopefully you can just be a genuine person. You don't have to be, you know, you see broadcast news and people are kicking things across the, you know, newsroom and yelling and screaming. Well, it doesn't have to be like that.
Well, then you meet them too, and it's like, you're different.
Yeah, than yeah, air. Yeah. And I mean, that's not my personality anyway. So he had a big influence. I think probably others just by osmosis.
Yeah.
You know, we used to listen to my buddy Rich. Absolutely loved Mike Lang. So when I was working in St. Louis, and remember the Penguins are winning cups now in the early 90s as a producer and doing some work there. You know, he was like, listen to this guy. He is the best. And actually, when you think about Mike Lang, and I think I told this to Mike once, when I was in Syracuse and we would do hockey highlights, I would say like, oh, Michael motorcycle, look at this goal. Because the people at Syracuse, I mean, I just
wait, yeah. Oh, wait. Is that why you come into the office a lot of days? Michael
oh, yeah.
motorcycle.
Michael,
he does
Michael
that to me almost every day.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Day. You know, I had a general manager in Syracuse who came up with an idea for me. He said, hey, this is an idea. I said, that's a great idea. I think I might steal that. He goes, well, if you steal an idea from me, you've stolen it twice because I stole it from somebody else. So I think that osmosis brings a lot of that to you. But when I go to speak to classes or whatever, I tell students, don't try to be like anybody else. Try to be as true to yourself as you can. And when we go back to writing, everybody writes in a little bit, everybody talks in a little different way. To me, when you're doing TV, you want to be talking with people. Like you said, you're having a conversation with them. They're part of your conversation. It's not the same kind of, TV writing is not the same kind of writing as, I mean, you can break it down, right? You're not Walt Whitman doing poetry. You're not, you know, Ernest Hemingway doing a novel. You're not a newspaper writer. It's a vocal presentation. So you have to write the same way you talk and then make sure when you read it, you're reading it as naturally and talking as possible. So I think, you know, Rich Gould was a big influence. Tons of people have influenced me over the years, but I think it's more by osmosis than it is by going out of my way and thinking, I want to emulate this person. I'll say, hey, that's a great idea, and I probably stole it somewhere and don't even realize I stole it, and I'm not giving it back. So,
favorite athlete of all time that you have maybe actually interviewed, witnessed in person?
Wow.
Anybody come to mind?
I mean, you know, there have been like thrills. I mean, to see, you know, Mario Lemieux, when I didn't get a chance to see him in his prime and to see him towards the end of his career, to see most of Sidney Crosby's career from the mezzanine, you know, that's pretty good. As far as like, you know, just covering athletes that I've covered. And again, when you go to talk, I'll bring up Dave Parker again, just because, you know, if you don't grow up in Pittsburgh, you don't really know, like, it's hard to form an opinion on Dave Parker. I don't think he was particularly good with the media. you. You know, you see the fans that threw batteries at him and stuff like that. Well, now you're talking to his teammates, and to me, that's a big measure. Look, yes. I want to go in, do my job, be cordial. I'm not going to be friends with people. I want to be friendly, do my job. Hopefully, I'm friendly to them. They're friendly to me. I tell the truth when I have to. Hopefully, they understand that. But there's no reason for acrimony. But I think Dave Parker brought some of that upon himself. But his teammates loved him. Mm-hmm. I went up to his house and interviewed him, and I was I wonder how this is going to go. He was incredible. Just the storytelling, the humor. He's a funny, funny man. And the other thing about Dave Parker, now that I'm on Dave Parker, and you talk about the Hall of Fame, there are players, and I'm not going to go down and name a list of players.
You guys in the passion and how we've talked about it a little bit, you've taught me a lot about the Hall of Fame, but this could be an entire episode just on that, because his research and your understanding of the game, it would be phenomenal, especially with the Pirates.
So here's I could make a long case for Dave Parker, but I'll try to make this brief, because I could go on. If we want to go on longer, I'll go on longer. You know, Dave Parker, we know about how great he was for 5 years. We know he had pop-up years after that. We know that a big part of the problem was he had bad knees to begin with. He played on artificial turf. He played so extraordinarily hard that he got hurt, right? So we're going to hold that against him? Mm. And he was productive. But if I was walking through the Hall of Fame, there are certain players that I'd walk by their play. Hey, there's Babe Ruth, okay? And I would maybe tell a story about, I'm thinking about my grandkid now. I'd tell him a story about Babe Ruth. I'd tell him a story about Willie Mays or Jackie Robinson. Then I might pass a few guys. If I came to Dave Parker's plaque, I would say, you should have seen this guy at his prime. There would have been something about him that I would have said he was incredible. And he was. He was incredible for 5 years. And that to me, and then very good for other years, that counts for something. That, you know, listen, a good long career in which you maybe never were the top 5 or 10 in the league, that counts for something too. I'm not trying to say exclude those people. I'm just saying Dave Parker, to me, did both and belongs in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion.
Well, there will be a Hall of Fame episode with the Hall of Famer. Rob King, we can't thank Rob enough for being on Holding My Cutter. You can hold that baseball out. I'll grab the cutter. Rob, thanks a million. Great seeing you again.
Brownie, thanks, man.
Yeah, hey, Michael, thank you very much. Yep. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Join us for our next episode of Hold My Cutter.